This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Health and Living. I'm Lee Chui Lin. Antimicrobial resistance, or AMR, arises when the microorganisms that cause infection survive exposure to a medicine that would normally kill them or stop their growth. Today, we have a panel of experts to talk about the very real global risk posed by overprescription of antibiotics to both humans and animals. On one side of that, we have the coordinator of the One Health University Network and head of the Veterinary Laboratory Diagnostics from UPM, Associate Professor Dr. Latifa Hassan. And on the other, we have infectious disease physician from Hospital Sungai Buloh, Dr. Benedict Sim. We're hoping that Deputy Director of Biosecurity from the Department of Veterinary Services, Dr. Marzuki Zakaria, will be able to join us. We're waiting on him. The traffic is terrible from what I understand. So fingers crossed. In the meantime, welcome to the show.
Evening, Lynn.
Thank you, Lynn.
So let's talk about the fact that we've been talking about this threat for what feels like a while now. You know, headlines keep warning about millions of deaths. Health experts are saying there could be an apocalyptic threat that's bigger than terrorism or climate change. Are we being alarmist, or is this actually where we're headed?
I think it's important from a health point of view to be aware about being seen as being alarmist, I think, because when that happens, then the message can be lost in the hype, and the experts can be discredited as well. However, looking at antimicrobial resistance now, I think most would argue that contrary from being alarmist, it is probably still not getting enough of the attention and even the priority that it needs. And this is even so among healthcare workers as well. Antimicrobial resistance is in a nutshell, it is not one particular strain of bacteria being resistant to one particular antibiotic and affecting just one particular group of individuals. It covers a varied many bacterial strains, and some of which are contracted in hospital, others are contracted out in the community, and the resistance of this bacteria to antibiotics does not occur overnight. There's a slow eroding of the effectiveness of the treatments that we have, and antibiotics that used to serve us well all these decades are now being increasingly less effective.
So how do we measure that resistance then? I mean, what is considered a bacteria that has become antibiotic resistant?
Okay, there are ways that we can measure that in the laboratory. For example, there are testing methods, and the most common that is being used is the disc diffusion test or the minimum inhibitory test. So the test actually measures if a bacteria is resistant and to how many different types of antibiotics is it resistant to, and also the concentration by which it is resistant to.
So how many deaths then are attributable to antimicrobial resistance compared with other major causes of death? Well, we're worried about the future, and while we know that, as you say, these things can be looked at in the lab, right now, how many deaths do we know of, or how many deaths are we anticipating?
This is a good question, but contrary to popular belief, it's actually quite a difficult question to answer. And the reason for that would be that many of these infections occur among those who are most ill, those whose immune systems are compromised, and those who are in hospitals for a long time, or those who are in the ICU. And for many of these patients, they have other organs that are failing, or they are ill from a lot of other conditions as well. And sometimes it's hard to actually put a specific cause of death, or how much does the resistant infection contribute to the overall mortality. The US have come up with some figures. I think they quoted in 2013 about 50,000 deaths from resistant infections, and that is the overall mortality. But what we do know is that if you compare patients who've got the same germ and that germ happens to be susceptible as opposed to resistant, susceptible to the antibiotic, there are specific studies that actually show that those with a resistant organism are twice or three times more likely to succumb from that infection.
We're talking today about antimicrobial resistance. You might have heard antibiotic resistance. This is kind of worse. If you'd like to give us a call, that number is 03-771-09000. You can also text 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio if you're worried about antimicrobial resistance or about antibiotics as a whole. Now, most of our data, as you both have mentioned, is something that we're seeing mostly from the Western Hemisphere, particularly the States, sometimes the United Kingdom. Do we know what it's like here in Malaysia with regard to antimicrobial resistance, both in our human population as well as in our livestock?
We've got actually fairly good data from in human health, and we take a few organisms when we use them as sentinel organisms, and we choose certain common antibiotics, and we measure it over time and how well it's working over time. So I can quote off a few examples. There's a very common bug called the Streptococcus pneumonia that causes a pneumonia, and is the most common cause of a pneumonia in a person who is not in hospital, and it's resistance to one of the most common antibiotics called erythromycin. The resistance to erythromycin was 20% in 2005, and it's 35% in 2015. There are also figures for Salmonella, which is another common bacteria, E. coli, and Klebsiella, and all these infections. If you choose the most common antibiotic that's used to treat them, the rates of resistance have gone up 1.5 times or twice as high.
Well, before we talk about the animals, why is that happening? Is it an overprescription of antibiotics? Is it our fault, or is it the bacteria getting smarter, I guess, is what I'm asking?
The bacteria always retains the ability to produce resistance. In a population of bacteria, if you subject all of them to a certain concentration of antibiotics, there will be a few mutant bacteria in there who somehow or another are not, they have the defense mechanisms against these antibiotics. So the more you subject this bacteria to the antibiotic, the higher the likelihood of you choosing out this mutant bacteria. And this mutant bacteria, when it goes on to propagate, then the patient would come down with a drug resistant infection. Part of it is because of exposure to antibiotics, and there's also another part, which is this is especially so in hospitals, what we call as infection control. If a patient who has a resistant bacteria, if he's not isolated in a correct way, or precautions are not taken, or hands are not washed, then he can pass on that resistant infection to his neighbour in the other bit.
I think it's really important to highlight the fact that it's a natural phenomenon. This resistance is a natural phenomenon. Whenever a living organism is exposed to something that threatens its existence, it naturally will build up the capacity to defend itself from whatever that is threatening them. So it's nothing spectacular. It's a natural phenomena. It's just the rate of by which this is happening is a worry, is a concern. And I like the word alarmist that you used just now, because alarmist is someone who created chaos, and panic without reasons. There is reasons and evidence for us to be concerned right now about AMR, but not to panic. Because with this knowledge that it is a problem and the concern that it is, people are so worried about the situation right now. So we hope that with that concern comes in the systematic intervention and measures by which we can tackle the problem.
Do we know why the rates are increasing. I mean, as you pointed out, it's a natural thing. It's something that would have happened regardless. But we seem to be accelerating it, I guess. And why? How has that process of acceleration come about?
Okay. One of the... I think it is important to understand that even in the human body, our body is much more bacteria than it is human. There are 10 times more bacterial cells in our body than there are human cells, and we are actually still at a very much learning about this, the whole bacteria ecology that exists in our body. And what happens is that whenever you disturb the dynamics of this bacteria ecology, you set up a risk for a person to harbor resistant bacteria. Now, so there are times when there is no choice and you have to treat a patient with antibiotics. A patient is dangerously ill or the patient has a limb-threatening infection and you have to give him antibiotics. And so antibiotics can perhaps be seen as a necessary evil when the risk of mortality or when there's a limb is being threatened, and then it will be appropriate to use an antibiotic at that point. What many of us are concerned about is that oftentimes antibiotics are used flippantly or for indications which are loose or indications where the person would get no benefit from being on an antibiotic and yet they are prescribed. So this sort of like just sets up a lot of opportunities for the bacteria to get more resistant.
Yeah, another factor that we have to remember is that antibiotic classes for the past 3 decades, there have been nothing, right, that have been discovered for the past 3 decades in terms of new classes of antibiotics being introduced into the market. So when you say acceleration of the resistance, are we really truly seeing acceleration, or is it because the bacteria are getting used to the available antibiotics in the market? So we have to ask that question.
And on your side, Dr. Latifa, how is... So Dr. Benedict just now mentioned the appropriate use of antibiotics in people. It has to be probably a serious condition or a life-threatening condition in order for it to be kind of appropriately used. It should be used with gravity. When it comes to our livestock, our animals, how is it being used and how should it be used?
Okay, so in livestock, Dr. Marzuki would be the most appropriate person to answer this, but I'm just going to answer it based on my knowledge as an academician and a person with veterinary training. So in livestock, the use can be prescription use, which means it could be used for prophylaxis or preventative. And another way of using it is for therapy. So when animals are sick, livestock are sick, or your chicken, your cattle, your goats, when these are sick, you need to treat them. So one of the tool that is being used is antibiotics. So another usage, and this is a controversial kind of one, is the antibiotic is being used as supplements in feed, as growth promoting. So that is an off-label use. And in the world, some of the countries have begun to ban the use of antibiotics as growth promoting, but they cannot get away with not using antibiotics at all. When livestock are sick, they need to be treated, but it's all prescription-based.
I'm speaking today with Associate Professor Dr. Latifa Hassan, who is the coordinator at One Health University Network and head of the Veterinary Laboratory Diagnostics at UPM, as well as Dr. Benedict Sim, who is an infectious disease physician at Hospital Sungai Buloh. And we're talking about antimicrobial resistance. Up next, we find out more about how the government is addressing this issue. If you've got any questions, do give us a call. That number is 03-77-109000. You can also text your questions to 016-201-9000. Or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon. You are listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin, and I'm joined in the studio by Associate Professor Dr. Latifa Hassan, who is the coordinator of the One Health University Network and head of veterinary laboratory diagnostics from UPM, as well as Dr. Benedict Sim, infectious disease physician from Hospital Sungai Buloh. And joining us now is Dr. Marzuki Zakaria, deputy director of biosecurity and SPS management division from the Department of Veterinary Services. Dr. Marzuki, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
All right. So we were talking about antibiotics earlier. How is the government addressing this issue of antimicrobial resistance?
From the Ministry of Health point of view, the Ministry has always taken this antimicrobial resistance very seriously, and we have at least over the last 10 years there's been increasing noise and increasing awareness programs among its health practitioners within the Ministry of Health. And I think this year we have really made big steps, and recently earlier in the year we had this formation of a National Antimicrobial Resistance Committee, and this is a cross-cutting committee across different ministries, and the Ministry of Health is obviously involved, and also the Department of Veterinary Services, and many other associations that bring in health experts, both in the human health as well as in the animal health sector. And just coincidentally, next week we're having our National Antibiotic Awareness Week, and this will be officiated, launched by none other than the Minister of Health, Dato' Sri Dr. Subramaniam, in Putrajaya Hospital in the middle of next week.
And when it comes to the veterinary point of view, what are we doing about addressing this issue?
Department of Veterinary Services are doing their utmost best to inform and to make the industry, the food producing animal industry, aware of the seriousness of the antimicrobial resistance problem. So at the moment, after the formation of the National Antimicrobial Resistance Committee with the Ministry of Health, together with a number of other ministries, we are embarking on several programs, but headed by the formation of four technical working groups. The technical working group one is, focusing on creating awareness among the industry players as well as the medical practitioners. And then the second technical working group is focusing on surveillance and research, and trying to find better ways how to solve this antimicrobial resistance. The third working group is focusing on reduction of prevention through reduction use of antibiotics. And the fourth working group is to optimize use of antimicrobials in animal production, as well as in medical practices as well.
There's been mention of how we're not keeping up to date in terms of our antibiotics and our antimicrobials, in the sense that we've been using the same ones for a generation now. Why aren't we getting new antimicrobials?
That's a very interesting question. And I personally think that, if you look at history, like Alexander Fleming found it in the late 1920s, and following which in 1940s, the product actually comes to the market. And after that, there's been this just innovation and more findings on new classes of antibiotics in the 50s and 60s. But 70s, it slowed down, and 80s, we really slowed down, and 90s, pretty much until now, no new classes has been discovered. So the antibiotics that have been used so far, the origin is mainly bacteria and fungus. So, and these are mainly soil-dwelling organisms. So I personally think, and this is perhaps my speculation, is that we have exhausted that resource. So now, with more innovation and more money into research, people are looking at finding new antimicrobials in at a different setting, in the ocean, in caves, at different extreme places in the world. So I think with R&D we will find more, if you are being optimistic, more different classes of antibiotics, no doubt. However, for now, because I think we have exhausted the premise by which we are looking, so we need to look elsewhere.
So what are those alternatives then to getting new antimicrobials?
I will probably take a step back first, because even though we are seeing the current antibiotics that we are using being less effective, but I think the easy answer would be probably to just discover newer and better antibiotics or other types of treatment for this bacteria. However, we do know that most of the low hanging fruit has already been plucked, and it will probably be expensive. It will take time. It will take a lot of a lot of brain power to actually come up with novel therapies. However, we do find that there's a lot of room for improvement.
Yes.
into current antibiotics that we have, fine-tuning, whether it's among humans or animals, which person would actually need antibiotics, which person benefits from antibiotics, and how to use these antibiotics better. We actually, there's this term that we use, which is called antimicrobial stewardship or antibiotic stewardship programs, and this is and this is done in the sector of human health for quite a few years now, but it's picking up speed, and it's getting more acceptability from the health practitioners, I think, because unfortunately sometimes resistance towards you can say proper or better antibiotic usage sometimes actually comes from the health professionals themselves who look at this as a curtailing their professional independence and what they can use and when they can prescribe an antibiotic for.
What is the role of antibiotics in agriculture? I mean, earlier we touched on it briefly, but Dr. Marzuki, I mean, we know about it in people, but when it comes to animals, how should it be used?
Okay, antibiotics is known to be one of the most successful chemotherapies that mankind have encountered. Various antimicrobials have been significant in the contribution of the prevention, control, and treatment of infectious diseases in animals since the 1940s. Low and subtherapeutic dose of antimicrobial plays important role for the improvement of feed efficiency, allowed animal growth to the full potential, prevention and the control of diseases.
And who regulates the use of antibiotics here in our country?
Okay, the regulation of antibiotic usage in food animal production, there are two agencies that are involved. The Pharmacy Division of the Ministry of Health, the National Agency on Pharmaceutical, they register human antibiotics and animal antibiotics for prevention and treatment. Whereas Department of Veterinary Services register and regulates the use of antibiotics in animal feed.
Now, moving forward, I mean, do humans and livestock get the same antibiotics or are they different?
Okay. Maybe the antibiotics may be from the same class, but they are of different generation. So animals may be given older generation antibiotics and human may be given newer generation antibiotics. And there are some antibiotics, antimicrobials, which are not used in human but only used in animals.
How does the use of antibiotics in animals then pose a risk to humans?
Okay, there seems to be a mechanism where the transfer of resistant genes from bacteria which are residing in animals, which are resistant to bacteria, they seems to be, when they are exposed to human through either occupational or through consumption of animal products, it's thought that these resistant bacteria that are residing in these animal products may be transferred to the human when they consume or when they expose. And so this certain bacteria supposedly have to transfer the genes. And also there is a mechanism, plasmid transfer. But all this seems so, seems true, but the actual crossover from animals, bacteria in animals into human and causing disease in human is still have to be, proven yet. So more studies and research have to be done to confirm this. In Europe, they take a precautionary principle when they read the Swan report in 1969. So they take the precautionary report of banning the antimicrobials usage in animal feed.
We've got a caller on the line now. Good afternoon, Tang.
Hi, Doctor. Hello. This is Mrs. Tang. My question is, you know, the antibiotic they put in food and things like this, can eat one? And also, because my son, the bodybuilding one, so eat a lot of egg. And then the chicken farm at Plain River there, a lot of biotics.
Okay.
Thanks, Mrs. Tang.
I would like to answer that question. When the veterinarians, the doctor were in charge of animals, they prescribe antibiotics for usage, either by the farmers or by themselves on way they treat the animal. So they will follow the manufacturer instruction according to dosage and according to duration of treatment. And when the animals are, let's say, a few weeks before slaughtering or processing, they will withdraw these antibiotics from the feed of the animal to ensure that there will be no residue or minimum level of residue below the maximum residue levels in animal products. So the Department of Veterinary Services, we carry out our antibiotic residue and pathogen monitoring program. So we do take samples from processing plants where we will take samples and we send to our lab to see whether these products have antibiotic residues or pathogens which are above the permitted level. So rest assured that the Department of Veterinary Services is doing all their best in trying to allay the fears of the public that it is safe to consume, wholesome, safe to eat, fit to eat, and safe food. Thank you.
Why can't we, is there a reason to stop using antimicrobials in food-producing animals, or is it more about using it safely?
It should be using it more safely, judiciously, according to guidelines that is being of. There is an international body on World Animal Health, the OIE, and also the WHO, World Health Organization, and also the Food and Agriculture Organization. These three international bodies have come to a conclusion where they have to work together as a tribe. So they will give out guidelines, standards on national bodies or national countries that have produced food animal production to follow these guidelines strictly.
Dr. Benedict, how often do you actually get people asking you about antibiotic resistance and in terms of prescription or in terms of their food? I mean, is that a conversation that you have outside of medical circles?
Not very often, I must say. When it comes, if you are comparing it to other health topics and other things that concern human health, I must say that knowledge or awareness of antibiotic resistance, whether it is in through inappropriate consumption of antibiotics or through the food line, I must say it's still fairly low in the minds of many people.
And Dr. Marzuki, while we're talking about judicious usage of antibiotics, how do we record our usage? How are we keeping track of what we're doing, where we're doing, considering there are so many different farms and, different places that our meat may be coming from?
Okay. The farms are usually serviced by the veterinarians, either from the feed millers or either they have their own veterinarians. And these veterinarians will prescribe the antibiotics to be used for prevention and treatment. And the judicious use of antibiotic is, I think, the first and foremost that we should be aware that there are a lot of etiological agent bacteria around that can cause diseases. But to find which antibiotics which are better suited to treat these diseases, the practice of sending samples to the laboratory and to run a test which we call antibiotic sensitivity test, that will serve a good guideline of which antibiotic each bacteria are sensitive to this antibiotic and should be used to treat the animal diseases, and not just blindly saying that I will use this antibiotic to treat without going through the antibiotic sensitivity test.
Looking ahead, are you expecting more regulative restrictions to be introduced?
Whatever restriction that we would like to propose, it will be a policy matter. And once the policy is being laid down and we have to come up with the details, and then we will come to a discussion with the industry, because we need to give them time, duration for them to adjust to the restriction. We just cannot simply ban or restrict right then and then without giving them ample time to adjust.
In general, then, what can we do about the antibiotic resistance that is already present? Is there a way to reverse it, or is it something that we just have to live with and adjust to?
It depends on who the target audience is. When it comes to healthcare professionals, it actually has been shown through practices of antimicrobial stewardship that by reversing or at least reducing the prescription of antibiotics, and if you look, we've also got good trends over the years of common antibiotics that are being prescribed, and as it can be expected, the rates of prescriptions is just going up year after year, and there have been studies that have shown that especially certain antibiotics, when they are curtailed or when they are cut down, then it does return some of the sensitivity of that bacteria towards not just that antibiotic, but also sometimes to other antibiotics as well. So even among the antibiotics, there are good guys and not so good guy antibiotics, and so we are learning more and more about it, and so certain antibiotics, now we realize that by limiting its usage, we can actually return some of the sensitivities back to the organism. In other words, we are extending the life the lifespan of that antibiotic, and also some of the other antibiotics that we are using as well.
So as you mentioned, it is partly the responsibility of the healthcare professional to be more judicious, that's a good word, about the prescription of antibiotics. But for patients who are being prescribed these antibiotics and who sometimes request for antibiotics for the cold or for just a tickle in the throat or anything, what would you suggest? I mean, how do we start to reshape our the way we think and the kinds of conversations we have with our doctors?
Yep. So I think when it comes to if you are a patient and you are going to see a general practitioner or a primary healthcare professional, I think the first thing that the first message that we will give is that don't pressure your doctor for antibiotics, because they are the doctor's job sometimes is hard, because there are times when it's very clear cut. You know, this is a clear-cut case where you need antibiotics, and there are times when it's very clear when you don't need antibiotics. But unfortunately, in medicine, there's a lot of grey areas as well. And of course, the more experienced a doctor is, the more well-versed he is in that field, he'll be that grey area sort of like gets smaller. But there will still be grey areas. And if you speak to a general practitioner on antibiotic prescriptions, for example, there was a study done in 2014 in Malaysia, and they looked at the prescription rates of antibiotics among government doctors and among general practitioners in private practice, and they found that among the government health clinics for the same conditions, antibiotics was prescribed about 17% of the time, whereas in the private GP side, it was prescribed 54% of the time for the same condition. So obviously that there's a possibility that, you know, all those patients who went to see a general practitioner is they happen to have a bacterial infection, but the more likely scenario is that there is a lot of grey areas and it looks as if that there is room for improvement on when antibiotics can be prescribed. And and if you speak to a general practitioner, many of them will say that, but the patients expect it. If they don't get it, they will just go to my neighbor who is down the road and he'll be given an antibiotic either way. You know, so the one advice I have for patients is don't pressure your doctor for antibiotics. And even if the doctor does prescribe you with antibiotics, and that's the slogan that we've been using for the last 2 years, you are allowed to actually ask the doctor, do I really need this antibiotic? Our slogan last year and this year is antibiotic per luke. Do I really need this antibiotic? And and there are also other ways apart from just pressuring the doctor for antibiotics, which is keeping yourself healthy and getting all the necessary vaccinations. Earlier this year, there was a scare with diphtheria in the country. And
with measles.
Yes, that's right. So if I'm a general practitioner and I hear about diphtheria happening in my neighbourhood, the week before, and today you're coming and see me with a sore throat, I'll be very tempted to actually just give you an antibiotic just in case you've got diphtheria. You know, but diseases like diphtheria are very vaccine preventable. So vaccinations, and of course, exercising, eating in moderation, and avoiding from smoking. All of this helps your immune system to cope with minor infections and where you do not need to see a doctor or demand for an antibiotic.
Dr. Marzuki, from the from the other side of that, I mean, obviously, for us, our responsibility is as patients, and Dr. Benedict covered that, but we also consume meat. I mean, we buy, we eat. So as consumers, what can we be doing to assist with coping with antimicrobial resistance?
Okay. I would like to speak for the benefit of the food animal industry, because they are the producers as well as the consumers. So if they were to put themselves in the consumer shoes, they would like to have animal products which are, not to say free from antibiotic. There is being use of antibiotic, but wholesome. The antibiotic does not become residues and which are available, which are still found in the animal product. So I would like to advise the industry players to know that antibiotics, there is benefits and there are risks. Benefits, you have disease control, prevention of disease. But the risk, there may be a rise of antimicrobial resistance. So, and antibiotic is not the only tools that we can use to treat or prevent diseases. A farm producer which have farms to keep care for animals should have high biosecurity. They should implement good farm management practices. And for diseases which are, protected through vaccination, make use of the vaccine to protect animals against those diseases. So by trying to improve the biosecurity of the farm, you will keep out the pathogens from coming in, and so you won't need as much antibiotic as before. And as consumers, probably we would like to have a wholesome food, not only free from antibiotic, but free from zoonotic diseases. Thank you.
We have a call now from Yong. Good afternoon, Yong.
Good afternoon, Julian, Dr. Latifa, Marzuki, and Dr. Benedict.
Good afternoon.
Yeah. So now you say they come up with a slogan, antibiotic palooka. So may I add, I believe for the efficacy of antibiotic, we must finish the course, right?
That's right.
Okay. So now, having said all that, to begin with, even the term antibiotic is a misnomer, right? I think it's time to change the name.
How do you mean?
Antibiotic, anti-life.
Well, antibiotic is meant to infer that the drug that is being used will kill certain living things that may harm you. So antibiotics is meaning that it will kill things that you want it to kill. For example, bacteria. Yeah. Does that answer your question at all?
Okay. Okay, I think Yong might be perhaps more firmly in the camp of renaming it to antimicrobials or antibacterial drugs, I guess. Okay, so in closing then, what message would you like to leave us with on the subject of antimicrobial resistance?
Coming from the... as an infectious disease physician where we are seeing on a daily basis patients suffering from bacteria that is increasingly difficult to treat, increasingly expensive to treat, and sometimes we are not able to treat this bacteria simply because none of our drugs work or the drugs are just too toxic for them. So coming from that point of view, and knowing that that any antibiotic usage can predispose a person to antibiotic resistance, and of course, so if you use an antibiotic when you really need it, and when it's then you can say that it is, you know, we can argue that that is justified, but when an antibiotic is being used flippantly, that sets us up for more problems in the future. So I would say that if you are handling antibiotics, whether you're a doctor or a pharmacist, or even a veterinarian, and or even in producing feed for animals, treat antibiotics with respect. It is very much a miracle drug that has been in our world for less than a century, and it really increased life expectancy. It has made a lot of advances in medicine possible, whether it's complex surgeries or transplants or cancer treatment or treatment of, you know, preterm babies, and you know, that has made so many advances in medicine possible. But if we lose the effectiveness of antibiotics in this, you know, in the next few years, which certain things point towards, that we are losing it, then I think we'll have a lot to regret. My message would be to use antibiotics with respect, with due forethought, before prescribing it, or before and even from a consumer point of view, before using it, you know, back to that slogan, antibiotic per luka.
In closing, Antibiotic Awareness Week will be taking place from the 14th to the 20th of November, and the theme is Antibiotics Handle with Care, which has also, of course, been the theme of our show today. Thank you all very much for coming in. I've been speaking with Associate Professor Dr. Latifa Hassan, Dr. Benedict Sim, and Dr. Marzuki Zakaria. We've been discussing antimicrobial resistance today on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.